caution is advised.
Good evening, everybody. It is 11 p.m., and thank you for joining us for the 61st episode of the Rock and Roll Shrink Radio Show here on Blog Talk Radio. Special thanks to our host, NDB Media. I'm Casey Shapiro, and with me tonight is Dr. Stephen Mathis, a.k.a. the Rock and Roll Shrink. We will be taking calls from our listeners all evening during the show at 914-338-0314. You can also follow along in our live chat room on blogtalkradio.com as the show is happening. Before we begin, a couple quick disclaimers. This show does not constitute a doctor-client relationship, nor legal or medical representation of any kind. Pardon me. Also, the views expressed on this show are those of Dr. Mathis and Ms. Shapiro, and are not an official stance on behalf of the psychological community or its peer vetting or regulatory bodies. And now, a topic-relevant bit of music played by Dr. Mathis himself. Take it away, Doc. Thank you for that, as always. And if you don't mind, let us know the name of the song and the artist and its relevance to tonight's topic.
Sure. So I thought since we were going to be doing a topic on discipline, I thought I would include an oldie but a goodie from the Bon Scott AC/DC era called Bad Boy Boogie.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, I thought it was perfect. So there you go.
Okay, yes,
played in all their martial glory, and with Angus Young playing his traditional SG Les Paul and Malcolm playing his Gretsch. So there we go.
Sweet. All righty. So thank you for that. As Dr. Mathis mentioned, tonight's episode is entitled Shaming as Parental Discipline, which we will discuss in a moment. Before we begin tonight's topic discussion, let's go to the Rock and Roll Shrink Recalls, which is a moment of rock music trivia stories as recounted by Dr. Mathis, if you would, sir.
Okay, so tonight I'm going to do somewhat of a recapitulation or reminder of a previous topic I talked about because of some news that's happening at the NAMM show this year, which is the big music gear show that when all the folks come out and parade their new gear for 2019. And the reason this is related is because we're going to harken back to one of my all-time favorite guitarists who's been in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame twice now, eclipsed only by one of his former bandmates, Eric Clapton, who's been in there three times. So, of course, I am talking about Jimmy Page. So the reason I'm bringing this up is even though Mr. Page has not made an appearance live on stage very often since the O2 Arena reunion with Zeppelin in 2007, which was in honor of Ahmet Artigan, who had passed recently, and he's in the 2008 closing ceremony Olympics. He did a little Whole Lotta Love rendition, Dilly, and then at Roy Harper's 70th birthday, who's an old acoustic buddy of his. Ergo, the song Hats Off to Roy Harper on the third album. That happened, he had a birthday concert in, I think, 2011. But other than that, Page has been kind of quiet on stage, but he's been busy at work with the Fender Corporation, who I've mentioned before, and in particular with a gentleman named Paul Weller, who is one of Fender's master builders. So for the last year or so, he's been working with the custom shop, and they are going to be putting out a rendition of his original Dragon, as he calls it, Telecaster. I'm going to entitle this Enter the Dragon. Oh, my God, I need a keeper. And the Dragon is the Telecaster that was originally given to him by one of his other bandmate buddies, Jeff Beck, who gave him the give it as a gift in, when he was with the Yardbirds. And I think the original one was either a 58 or a 59 Telecaster. And Page had that was the one Page had taken and stripped the paint off and refinished it and modded it into this kind of psychedelic-y Dragon. And then he had one that he added mirrors to, you know, kind of in honor of all the, you know, flashy glitter dillies happening at the time. And then stripped it off. And the second modification was this hand-painted Dragon that he did. And then put a clear plastic pickguard on it with a shimmery foil so it added to the psychedelia, right? So this is the one that when he went on, and he played this with Yardbirds and early Zep, and then when he went on tour with Zep, one of his buddies went and thought they were going to fix it by refinishing it correctly, and they screwed the whole guitar up, and I had told that story previously on this show. So what I wanted to talk about tonight is because that Fender is recreating the original Dragon with Jimmy Page actually providing the painting for some of these things on the guitars. And they're reissuing this thing at some point this year to the general public. And they're also reissuing the predecessor to this, which is the one with all the mirrors on it. And evidently the one with the mirrors on it is going to come in a very limited hand-signed version that's going to run about $25,000. So I guess somebody's going to really have to want a room full of mirrors to make a Jimi Hendrix bad pun. To really like that guitar. I mean, I've seen the original one, pictures of the original one, and it wasn't, yeah, well, okay, come on, you know, give me a shout. I'm always doing this. I've seen the original pictures of the original mirrored Tele, and I'm kind of looking at it going, and you did that, why? But that's just me, and I'm weird. The Dragon Tele to me is much, much cooler, and that comes out, I think, summer of this year. And in conjunction with that, Page has gotten together with some independent amp luthiers to recreate a special one-off amp he's calling the Sun Dragon, which goes with the guitar, the Dragon that Fender's putting out, the Telecaster Fender's putting out. When the Dragon comes out, I've been told that the Dragon is going to come out at roughly $1,400, so that's a much more manageable price point for most folks, I suspect. But anyway, that's not coming out till the summer. The mirrored guitar is coming out, I think, in spring, and it's only going to be maybe 25 of those. At any rate, in sort of in that same genre, there's going to be 50 amps made that he's calling the Sun Dragon that he's making with some independent amp builders who are coming together to basically build an identical amp that he used on the first three Zep albums that he played the lead solo to, oh my Lord, I'm having a brain fart, Stairway to Heaven with. So even though on stage he played Marshalls and, you know, back in the day he was playing Super Coronados and that he had like hot rodded. So this is supposed to be like the hand-wired version of that amp and it's supposed to be very authentic and, you know, I have no clue how much that thing's going for. I could find nothing on anybody's website as to what that's going to look like in terms of price point, but I suspect it'll be pricey because there are going to be 50 of them. And this, of course, is in honor of the 50th anniversary, which is the of the Led Zeppelin 1 being released, and that's what sparked all this kind of stuff. So it's the 50th anniversary of the Led Zeppelin 1 recording that they're doing all this with. So that's kind of how this is playing out. So I thought people would love to hear sort of a this to me kind of brings a little bit of the old and a little bit of the new together, and that, you know, everything old is new again, and, you know, things that were not that cheek you and deboner back in the day, because Supros were very, you know, not great amps back in the day, and they were, you know, the studios had them and all, but they weren't considered the highest ranking thing, and they've become very, very, very sought after amps, particularly since they've been retooled recently. But all this stuff surrounding Page and his early career has really taken off, so this is going to be kind of a cool dilly. So if folks want to look at it, they can go to, there's a site called sundragon.com that has a picture of what the amp's going to look like. So those gear geeks like myself can go to that and look and see what the amp looks like. So all that got released this week with the NAMM show, and I thought that'd be kind of a nice piece of trivia for folks to wrap their head around, both old and new trivia, because I'm sure once those come out, they're going to be all the rage. This is, you know, just shows to go, yeah, as I like to say, that no matter how old you are, you know, and you don't have to be some old fart sitting in a wheelchair, because Page is certainly not doing that. He's a very active guy and really got his fecal material together, and I think he's 75 now, so, I mean, he's really... my hat is off to that gentleman. That man, my hat is off to that gentleman. I mean, he is really doing his thing, and I love it. I think it's awesome.
Oh, bless him. Okay, awesome. Thank you. Thank you for that.
Sure.
Now, if y'all will bear with me just a moment, I had a bit of a printer barf earlier, and so I'm doing the script off of Microsoft Word instead of a hard copy, so I'm having to switch windows. So beg your indulgence for the long pauses. But anyway, we are taking calls.
Hopefully
from
it's not your bedroom window.
Oh, ha! I'll let Mark know you said that. we're taking calls from listeners who don't tell puns and questions in the online chat room that are not painful throughout the evening until around midnight. Please feel free to groan and give us a call. Again, the number is 914-338-0314. Okay. So tonight's show is called Shaming is Parental Discipline. I don't guess this applies to puns. Damn it. All right, guys. So even if you're not on social media that much, most people have certainly heard by now of stories of frustrated parents trying to wrangle defiant or unruly children, and of them resorting to a wide variety of public acts of shaming and humiliation as a deterrent. As a society, we are only a few generations into the process of unlearning these practices and finding healthy ways to parent misbehaving children. Many adults who were raised by multi-generational shame punishment parents are still living, and that belief is rampant in our culture. We also want to be clear with our listeners that tonight's discussion is not at all about us saying don't ever discipline, correct, or punish your children at all. It is singling out one way of doing so that is destructive, toxic, and ultimately not effective. We just want to make sure that you guys are clear on that part. I don't want to get any irate letters later. Okay, so tonight we are going to discuss the roots of shaming discipline, why this method does not actually work, how to discipline or correct in a healthy manner, and wrap up conclusions. And I'm going to check in with you, Dr. Mathis, before we get started and see if there's anything you want to chime in with before we get going.
Nope, I'm good, thanks.
Okay, so the roots of shaming discipline. What is the difference between guilt, shaming, and humiliation? These are related words, but they are not interchangeable. So guilt is an external feeling of not living up to someone else's expectation of us, typically felt after finding out we did or did not do something that disappointed or angered someone else. Humiliation is defined as the emotion you feel when your status is lowered in front of others. And the source for that is Psychology Today. And shame is an internal bad feeling of self-consciousness about a deed or trait. Other people need not have said anything in order for shame to be felt. For example, a lot of people feel shame about their appearance, even if nobody has been picking on them. And I will warn you guys about this. Some of the articles and posts that I quote use these words a little more interchangeably, like shame is internal, but they use it as one would guilt. So that's why I wanted to make sure to define these, because I don't want that to confuse y'all later. So now, how old must a child be for this technique to even work? And I use the term work loosely, and we'll get into that in a bit. So at approximately age 3, emotionally typical children, and, you know, I say that because some children are different, have developed a sense of wanting to please valued others, like, you know, parents or neighbors they like, that sort of thing. They want to be correct, or they want to be accepted. It's not the same as an adult would do, but that's the beginnings of their understanding that process. What confuses parents when told not to use this method is that shaming and humiliation used as a punishment or to correct a child does in fact often produce the immediately desired results. And so many short-sighted parents who don't know any better often cite this as proof that it works, allowing the instant gratification to make them feel as if the problem is now solved. The problem lies in the long-term effects of this method and how it erodes and poisons the parent-child bond and relationship. I want to actually see if you had anything you wanted to add before I get to the next part, Dr. Mathis.
Well, and ultimately, it sets the kid up to have a lowered sense of self-efficacy and self-esteem, and to use an external guideline as his or her yardstick as to whether they're doing right or wrong, when ultimately we need to be internal, teaching kids to internalize that kind of thing.
Yes, and that actually will be echoed throughout the show. Several sources have alluded to this.
Okay, well, there you go.
Yeah. So our history of shaming culture, and by this I mean essentially mostly United States culture, a little bit Western culture. So first quote, for shame, public shaming sentences on the rise. That's a post title from February 4th, 2015 at prisonlegalnews.com. And this is about an increase in shaming sentences from judges. Now, this is not about children, but I'm showing the building blocks of how we have normalized this behavior in our society. Our criminal justice system has normalized it as a way to deal with criminals. So the article says, shaming criminals has long been an integral part of America's criminal justice system. And public whipping and the stocks were commonly used in Puritan and colonial times. During that era, imprisonment was reserved for debtors and those awaiting trial. Upon conviction, a judge could order an offender to be executed, flogged, banished, or shamed. End quote. Shame sentences, and by this I mean, you know, prison sentences, not words, used in the last decade in this country typically include standing in public with a humiliating sign. Other choices were, and yes, these are for adults, writing about the wrongdoing like a school child would, you know, where you have to write 100 sentences, I will not moon the teacher, or whatever you're doing. Being made to go to the morgue and view victims' bodies. I assumed from the article that meant their victims, but I was not clear on that. Another one is spending a month in a literal doghouse or forced vasectomies. And I know that's been challenged like hell in court. And yes, while we are not a political show, it absolutely is a separate, valid argument to question the constitutionality and human rights value of pretty much all of these sentences. So there's that building block which normalizes this in our society. And when it comes from the legal system, it has a gravitas that a lot of people really internalize, and they shouldn't. Influence is validating these tactics are old cultural staples of ours, such as spare the rod, spoil the child culture. And that comes from the Bible, Proverbs 13:34. Incidentally, this is yet another example of adages that we claim we should live by, yet do not know or will not admit that this phrasing is actually wrong, as it doesn't appear in Proverbs. And hotly debated among modern theologians as to the exact meaning of the rod in this verse. The verse is often used to justify harsh parental discipline, often corporal punishment, but it may not have meant what people use it for. When they say the rod, it may be a metaphor rather than literally using a stick on people as punishment.
I can actually speak to that.
Oh, by all means, jump in.
So, having mentored and supervised Christian counselors who were doing dual masters, I can tell you what it means, because that is a misquote from the Bible, and it's taken completely out of context, which my Christian counseling supervises students called proofed texting, which is lifting things out of the Bible incorrectly and then applying them to suit your fancy. So the context of this is the staff or rod used by a shepherd to gently kind of push his flock in the right direction and to defend the flock against wolves and other predators. So if you spare the rod, the sheep get eaten, you know. So this is not about beating the crap out of your kid. It has never meant that, ever. So that is a complete distortion of the biblical passage. So I can definitely tell you what that is supposed to be.
Yes, and that does reflect the things that I saw in several articles about this. That is what theologians have been contending, that the majority of our culture misuses that phrase, and they especially misuse it to justify corporal punishment on children. That is not what Proverbs says. Please feel free to look it up in a well-translated version, not King James, and it will substantiate what you've just said. This and other myths are typically perpetuated by those who are uneducated about their meaning or those who are emotionally too immature to do their parenting work the exhausting but much healthier way. They seek to validate their own excuses. So that's not actually a thing, and we should take it out of our culture, or at least use it how it was intended. Another cultural icon in Western shaming culture is the Scarlet Letter by Nathaniel Hawthorne, and the big red A for adultery in the story. Hester Prynne and Puritan society absolutely set the proto-foundations for our punishment culture. And so with that, I want to sidebar to you, Dr. Mathis. Is there any particular demographic or pathology that seems more prone to this than others? Some of the studies I read for this show suggest this is really huge with narcissistic parents, for example.
It's pretty replete with most cluster B parents, whether they're antisocials, narcissists, or borderlines.
Got it.
And generally parents who were parented that way themselves and don't know any better, or who have some unresolved issues due to post-traumatic stress disorder that they have as kids, yada, yada. So it's the bottom line is it's with dysfunctional parents, not with successful and loving and what I call real parents.
Got it. Okay.
And a good source of looking at some of these tactics that pathological parents use, so I'll put a plug in for Dr. Susan Ford's book, which I often refer to folks who have had these kinds of folks as parents. Her book is called Toxic Parents, and I often refer to folks who have had one or more versions of what Dr. Ford describes as toxic parents. And the thing I like about her book is she talks about the five kinds of toxic parents that she's identified, what their modus operandi is, how they got there, and then the second half of the book tells you how to deal with each one of them. So it's a really well-written, well-structured text that I often refer as bibliotherapy for my folks.
Okay, so that's Toxic Parents by Susan Ford is the book?
Yes.
Okay. Perfect. So you guys know, go out and get a copy. I'm sure it's probably on Amazon or something or another like
that.
Yes. I'm fairly certain. Okay, perfect.
Yep.
All right. So next, I'd like to mention here an infamous example of not only using public humiliation parenting, but how some parents do not see what they do as abusive, and yet they do seem to recognize more stereotypical types of abuse. Huffington Post interview by Ryan Buxton, 2014. And this is a follow-up to an internet incident and which became a meme and a cultural trope in 2012. And Buxton says, possibly the most extreme, most ridiculous, and most unlikely to reflect well on the parent incident of public shaming happened in February 2012 when a dad, Tommy Jordan of North Carolina, shot up his daughter Hannah's laptop because she was complaining about cleaning up after him on Facebook. Tommy Jordan, the IT guy with a 45, and I believe that's his YouTube moniker. He's a YouTube, not star, but like personality, which means he does regular videos, has a following for that. Posted an 8-minute video wherein he reads her comments, complains about them, and then starts shooting. And I've seen the video. He addresses the audience, and then he's got the laptop on the ground nearby, and he takes the camera over, probably his cell phone, and he takes out his 45, and he shoots it. Quote, these are exploding hollow point rounds, he explains in the video. Jordan found internet fame and became a meme for a while back in 2012 when he filmed himself shooting holes in his 15-year-old daughter's laptop after she posted a disrespectful message about her parents on Facebook. The video went viral, racking up 39 million views on YouTube, and it prompted debate about whether his form of discipline crossed the line and set a bad example. I can tell you right now, this video is chilling and frightening and full of a lot of the toxic culture that has become disturbingly rampant in the last couple of years and has come to the forefront because it views our current culture as permission. This guy is full of that culture. It is really, really frightening. 2 years later, being 2014, when the interview took place, Jordan had no regrets about unloading on his daughter's computer. He told HuffPost Live on April 1st, 2014. During a discussion about whether parents should share their children's punishments online, Jordan said he posted his video to make a point to his daughter about the visibility of content posted on social media. He didn't say what that point was. During the conversation, Jordan reacted to a disturbing new video posted online of a father whipping his daughters with a cable wire after he caught them filming themselves twerking. Jordan described it this way, quote, that wasn't discipline, that was child abuse, end quote. Jordan said that while the video he made may become part of his daughter's reputation, she learned a lesson without suffering any physical harm, you know, because that's the only kind, of course. Quote, my daughter may always be known as the girl who lost the laptop, and what he means is whose dad shot it up. Okay, she's not the girl who was beat with an electrical cable and suffered flayed open wounds, he said. There are no real follow-up articles on how Hannah is doing now. I did a little bit of snooping around in preparation for the show. In this same HuffPo article, they have a link to her Facebook profile, Hannah Marie Ambrose. I had debated bringing up where it was because I'm sure somebody's going to listen to the show and go look. But frankly, you can Google this stuff. It's public knowledge. And now she's an adult, so it doesn't matter. Her profile is still fairly sanitized or locked as of October 2018, where I saw a picture of her and her dad together in their kitchen being all smiles. And you got to wonder how much of that is a put on to survive him. It looks like she may still be living at home. This can be useful to many other kids whose abusive parents bullied them in this way to know how the story ends. Sadly, this one, we don't. And with that, I'm going to check with you, Dr. Mathis, and see if there's anything you want to add to this.
Oh, yes. So, to quote a line from an old Andrew McCarthy movie, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words hurt worst of all. So emotional abuse is as damaging, if not more so, than physical abuse.
Yes.
It is the emotional after overlay of physical abuse that is the thing that causes post-traumatic stress disorder and other nasty things, not so much the physical action in and of itself. So both are very damaging. In terms of her putting on smiles with the dad, it could be, as you suggest, it also could be to the point where he has brainwashed her in a sense. Because if you look at people who are standing next to people like Jim Jones and David Koresh, they have smiles on their faces too.
Yeah.
So,
they had smiles as they were dying and drinking the Kool-Aid.
So if somebody's got a gun to your head, you can do a lot of smiling. Or if you are deluded because you're in, Tapao might say, deep in Duplocto, and you're in the mindset of this person is sweet and wonderful, and I'm a Star Trek weirdo too. And you're deluded into the cult mentality, so to speak. It doesn't matter whether the cult, and I mean no disrespect to any of these comments I'm about to make, whether the cult is the Catholic Church, whether it's, oh my Lord, I'm having a brain fart. The guys that want all your money. Tom Cruise religion. Tom Cruise religion people.
Oh, Scientology.
Yeah, Scientologist or whatever. They got smiles on their faces too, as long as they're believing the delusion. So, that could be a put on for all kinds of reasons. So I would not take that as evidence that, this girl's perfectly fine today, and by any stretch of anybody's imagination. So, if you're going to discipline somebody, better to use natural and logical consequences as opposed to traumatizing statements or actions. And for those who want to learn that, one of the things I do with my parents is I refer them to Alfred Adler, one of my heroes, who talks about that, from whom tough love comes, which is often also misapplied and misunderstood.
Yeah.
So I find myself having to explain that a lot to parents who have a completely erroneous version of what that's supposed to be like.
Yeah, that's a good point that I did not catch to put in my notes. The tough love movement is another cultural trope that's been misapplied to justify.
Yes, because in its pristine, if it's applied the way it's supposed to be applied, in the way manner that was taken from the Adlerian principles, it's a great parenting technique. But the way that it is misapplied, I sort of liken it to a lot of the 12-step stuff, because if you look at the original 12 steps and what that stuff was originally intended to do, the group therapy, the group support, and social support and spiritual support that folks get from the 12-step meetings, that's what they were originally designed to do. 12 steps were never designed as a therapy tool. They were not intended. They are not a therapy tool. They are a source of spiritual and social support for folks who want to be sober. And if folks use it that way, that's a great thing to do. But unfortunately, most of our society has taken that as a therapy tactic, which it is not, and that has caused all kinds of problems in a number of arenas. So I see that as being the same phenomena as the spare the rod and spoil the child, or the misapplication of Adler's natural and logical consequences.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, and with that, I would like to go to the next section to talk to you guys about why this method does not actually work. And I know there's going to be some listeners or someone along the way who's like, well, works just fine for my kids. And I'm going to push back, and I repudiate you for saying that. And I hope you guys take this next section seriously. So the first quote is from raisingchildren.net.au. It's Australian. But the same principle applies, and they primarily speaking about Western culture, not Aboriginal culture here. Shaming and humiliating children is emotionally abusive. It is not okay to smack children physically or with words. Young people deserve and are entitled to reach out, attach, and bond with their caretakers. It is an expectation that the parents will provide safety, protection, acceptance, understanding, and empathy. The next quote is from Shaming Children is Emotionally Abusive. Children respect those who respect them, which was posted September 2012 by Carol McBride, PhD. Quote, young people deserve and are entitled to reach out, attach, and bond with their caretakers. Oh, I think this got pasted up in the top part, too, and it shouldn't have. So going further down that paragraph, when this does happen, children grow up knowing their worth and demanding respect from others and themselves. When children are emotionally or psychologically abused, they grow up feeling unloved, unwanted, and fearful. Normal development is interrupted, and it sends the wounded child into exile. This is when negative internal messages are developed and why we have so many adults today feeling not good enough. I cannot tell you how many people I see on social media, a lot of people that I have connected to, and chunks of their feeds every week is about how they're not good enough. This shit is rampant. And so it's got to stop because that's where it's coming from. The next quote is from Don't Shame Children in Pursuit of Discipline, which is from April 2013 by Peggy Drexler, PhD. And Peggy says, shaming can happen in front of others, but it's just as likely to happen in private between parent and child. Again, what I told you guys earlier about the using the words interchangeably, they shouldn't, but they're going to. Just make sure that you guys can follow. As a form of behavior modification, though, shaming, whether obvious or subtle, is ineffective and even destructive. That's because since most kids can't distinguish between their impulses, their actions, and themselves, instead of condemning the behavior, shaming ends up condemning the child and making him feel bad about himself or herself. It's important to recognize that discipline is not the same as punishment. Discipline is necessary. Punishment is not. In most cases, misbehavior among toddlers and young kids isn't something that requires punishment, but instead some understanding and a frank parent-child discussion. Many kids will act out as a cry for attention or for firmer limits. Most kids, especially boys, she says, have an impulse to push boundaries while also needing to know that they'll be reined in. Others act out as they learn how to get their desires met. All kids at one point or another will express a feeling or need in a socially unacceptable way. The job of the parent is to help kids develop positive strategies for expressing those feelings and needs and set their own limits, part of which includes learning about consequences. The next quote is from Publicly Humiliating Kids and Calling It Discipline is Barbaric by Sarah Cottrell on scarymommy.com. There's no date for this. And Sarah says, when it comes to disciplining children, there are a million ways to sundown to teach a kid to rein in their impulsive behavior. For most parents, this involves a combination of open communication, age-appropriate consequences, and staying consistent with rules and positive reinforcement. But for others, discipline takes the form of publicly shaming and humiliating their kids. It's become even more of a phenomenon with the rise of social media and the ability to amplify our anger and frustration with our kids by posting images of them in degrading positions, like getting their head shaved, wearing a sign on a busy street, etc., that guarantee reaction from their family, community, and peers. And the last part, short-term danger, and I missed the source on this one. I apologize for that. So not only is shaming potentially damaging, it places kids in danger. Pardon me a moment. Sorry, I'm having a cough. That's a little unruly, and I can't punish it. So the danger is child predators go online in chat rooms and stuff like that, and they look for insecure kids with low self-esteem, which comes from shaming. A parent who publicly shames a child also makes him a target for bullies at school. After all, anyone can view what's shared online. And so a lot of these people that you're looking for validation from, you're teaching some of his more toxic peers and other people to prey on him or her or they. So this is extremely damaging, even though it seems like it's not the same as being whipped with a cable. But these are some of the ways that could be misused, and it's probably worse. Another aspect of this dynamic that causes damage but is not discussed as often is adult-to-adult shaming done purposely in front of the children to manipulate the other adult, like a co-parent, another family member, adult sibling, etc. Whether both parents are together or not as a couple, ridiculing or mocking something the other one did, whether with them present or not, especially not, like if one is a single parent, erodes children's trust of you and self-esteem or security about both of you. And I can guarantee you that child's going to wonder what the hell you say about them when they're not around. Stuff like, your dad is so messy, or your mom's cooking is awful, isn't it? Or even, your sister is prettier, or you are, than she. Even as adults, the person being criticized can now no longer trust you to keep their feelings private. And so likewise with your kids. And here I'm going to pause and check in with you, Dr. Mathis, see if you'd like to add anything.
Yeah, so I have a couple of comments. Generally, I'm working with a couple of adults right now who have had that kind of experience as kids, being shamed and told they're worthless losers, not good enough, whatever. And this has definitely carried into their 30s, 40s, and 50s of the folks that I'm working with. I always tell parents never, ever compare one kid to another, because no two kids are the same. No two adults are the same. No two adults with the same, or kids with the same disorder, are the same. I went through this with somebody the other day. They were like, well, how come, you know, so-and-so else has got ADHD, or so-and-so else has got depression. How come, you know, I don't fit that mold? Right, because no two people with depression are the same. So there's not one kind of depression. There's not just one kind of ADHD. And, you know, and you can just see their eyes getting big. And it's like they think this is one size fits all. Well, the same thing is true with kids and adults. None of us are the same. None of us are equal. We all have differing gifts that we come to the table with, and differing deficits that we come to the table with, you know, and all of us have weaknesses or strengths. But to make fun of it and to ridicule it and to question somebody's judgment every 5 minutes is not the way to get them to fall into line. It's the way to create someone who has a lifelong history of self-questioning and self-loathing and low self-esteem and low self-efficacy, which are not correlated with happy lives, FYI. And by the way, this is the same kind of tactics used with a lot of abusive religious organizations, whether they're considered quote-unquote cults or whether they're considered part of, you know, things like the Catholic Church. And this is not my rag on the Catholic Church. It's just I've seen documentaries recently of some of the sex abuse scandals that are going on and yada yada. So it's fresh in my mind. I do not want people to assume that I have a hard on against the Catholic Church, because I do not. I have a hard on against all organized religions, honestly. But that's another tale. Spirituality, I am nothing but respectful of, but religious or official religions and the rules and regs and the way that they interpret stuff, I don't gel with them. And if it gels with one of our listeners, that's great. Please don't take that as a condemnation. It's just my personal pet peeve. However, there are religious organizations out there who do abuse their power and castigate their members, and they use fear. And a lot of religions do this, use fear to you know, get you to behave, which is another aspect of discipline. Right? Because ultimately, if you're a Judeo-Christian person and you want to follow the precepts of Jesus Christ and God and that kind of stuff, you should be doing it out of love, not out of fear. Big, 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 big difference. But again, that's kind of tangential related to this. I would also let you know that a lot of these tactics are used in some cases in the military and in some cases with certain coaches in certain athletics. Will use this kind of thing, public denigration of players and this kind of stuff. It was used by Nazi Germany during World War II, and it is often used by hate groups to marginalize folks that they don't like. So don't fall in with these pathological people. This is a very, 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 very bad idea.
Fair enough. All right. So the next part I want to talk about is how to discipline or correct in a healthy manner. Okay, so how do parents recognize when they're using guilt as a disciplinary tool? So here are some snips from a couple of articles so you can look at what you're doing and see if any of this sounds familiar. With my usual caveat from before, that they're using shame and guilt and stuff like that interchangeably. Not correct, but at least now you know. Okay, so what is shame? Shame is designed to cause children to curtail behavior through negative thoughts and feelings about themselves. It involves a comment, direct or indirect, about what this child is. Shaming operates by giving children a negative image about themselves rather than about the impact of their behavior. What does shaming look and sound like? In other words, like when you're doing it, what's that seem to be like? Shaming makes the child wrong for feeling, wanting, or needing something. It can take many forms. Here are some everyday examples. The put-down. You naughty boy. You acting like a spoiled child. You selfish brat. You crybaby. Moralizing. Good little boys don't act that way. You've been a bad little girl. The age-based expectation. Grow up. Stop acting like a baby. Big boys don't cry. That's a big one. For the love of God, stop that shit. The gender-based expectation. Toughen up. Don't be a sissy. Or, oh my God, toxic stuff. The competency-based expectation. You're hopeless. The comparison. Why can't you be more like so-and-so? None of the other children are acting like you are. If you're saying these sorts of things to your child, you are shaming them. And then from an article on healthyway.com, 7 ways you're unknowingly shaming your child. In other words, this is sort of a more passive way of doing it, and we may not have thought of it that way before. First, not letting a child do things for themselves. There's kind of an implicit suggestion that the child can't do something if you're not letting them do it, even if you do it wrong. Number 2, and related, judging your child's choices. They need to go through the process of making some crappy choices so they understand what that is. Number 3, telling them not to cry of any gender, but especially the boys. We've made up that they're not allowed to do that, and they're human animals, just like all the other human animals, and they have functionality and emotions and things, and we need to stop stifling that or gendering it. Number 4, setting expectations too high. You know, the tiger mom, we've made that sound sexy, and it's really not. Number 5, public timeout or discipline. There are some parents who will pull the child out of a group of people and put them in the corner or discipline them in front of other people. Do not do that. Number 6, using a harsh tone or laughing at your child. You know, there can be laughing with your child if the child realizes or seems to realize that something is silly, but if you're mocking the child or yelling at them, that is a way of shaming them. And 7, telling them they are not a big boy or girl or person. Once you guys realize that you're doing this, how do you stop and do things in a healthier manner? So from Psychology Today, there was a post, how to break the cycle of shame with your child. And among their suggestions were to resist the urge to ridicule, guilt trip, or shame in small ways that seem harmless, quote unquote. Model the behavior you want. Welcome discussion on all issues. And this seems vague, but what it's referring to is if you imply to a child that they can't talk to you about certain things, they will not talk to you about certain things, but they're going to talk to someone. So if you fuss at them for trying to confide in you, all you're going to do is cut yourself out of the loop. Guide with empathic limits. And I actually had a little trouble parsing what they mean by that. So if you understand that phrase better than I do, Dr. Mathis, feel free to jump in. I don't know
what they're talking. I think what they're talking about is teaching and guiding with some empathy, saying, you know, I know this is hard, but I have confidence you can do it. So it's acknowledging the fact that this is a tough thing for someone to do, but that you also, on the next breath, express confidence that they can learn how to do it, or they have the equipment to learn how to do it, or they're competent to do it if they just practice it and go at it. So you're not okay. guiding like a military drill instructor.
It's more like, you know, kind coaching, essentially.
Yeah.
Sounds like.
Yeah.
Okay. And then the last suggestion is resist the urge to punish. And I know that one is really hard, but we're here tonight to talk about
here's the easy
how
one.
Shaming doesn't work. Okay, go ahead. Yes.
So here's the easy. I tell parents to get rid of that word punishment in your vocabulary, because all it does is set you up to be the bad person and set the child or person that you're wanting to punish, adult or whatever, as being the victim. And if they're the victim, they can blame you for their feeling and their failure and, oh my God. And I tell people, get that word out of your vocabulary and stop thinking of punishers. Think of ways to incorporate, and we're back to this again, natural and logical consequences in your day-to-day life and in your interactions with both your adult folks and your child, adolescent folks. That takes a lot more work, because you have to get creative, you know, when you do that. It's a lot easier to say to a kid, okay, you didn't turn your homework in, you're grounded. Okay, or okay, you're not going to the movies. Well, natural and logical consequence, that is punishment. You don't want to do that. You want to tie the consequence of a person not doing something to something that's going to give them a timeout and going to teach them the principle you want them to learn, which is responsibility. So you can say to a kid that doesn't turn his homework in and wants to go to the movies, you know, as a parent, I can't really in good conscience allow you to do things and have all these things that you need to do for fun, because you haven't learned some basic skill sets. And it's my job to teach you how to do skill sets. So here's some set of exercises I'm going to want you to do, or you're going to need to now do your homework now and get this thing turned in before it's too late, or show some responsibility before you have privileges, because nobody has privileges until they demonstrate responsible behaviors. And so when I figure out that you've demonstrated responsibility and responsible behaviors by turning homework in, by doing what you say you're going to do, whatever the issue is, by not breaking the speed limit, you know, you've lost the ability to have privileges to do certain things until you've gone back and learned some responsible behaviors. And I, as a parent, want to ensure that you do that, because that's my job. So you get the same thing done, but you get it done in an educational manner as opposed to a punitive manner, which makes them completely and totally responsible for their stuff. Because if they chose not to do their homework and they chose to act in an irresponsible manner, you're going to step in and say, hey, wait a minute, my job is to teach you, is to help you learn responsibility, so here's what we're going to do that. And until that happens, I can't let you go out and do your stuff, because that would be irresponsible of me. So you're modeling the behavior you want the kid to do, and you're couching it in terms of natural logical consequences. It makes the kid responsible for his or her consequences. So if they want a different consequence, they'll do a different behavior. If you punish them, they're going to resent it. They're going to feel victimized. And if they're the kind of kid that has any sort of retaliatory bones in their body, so to speak, it's going to give them all kinds of ammunition to feel like they need to get back at you, which you don't want.
Got it. Okay, good. Thank you for that.
Sure.
So, all right, guys. So what if you've already publicly shamed your kids? You might be reading this and thinking, oh, no, I've already done this. Now is your opportunity to apologize. Your kids need to see that you're human and willing to own your mistakes. Oh, my God, this is huge. Please do this.
Yep.
This will never bite you in the ass as much as just digging in your heels and continuing to pee on the same mistake over and over again and expect it to come up flowers. So even if you're experiencing a degree of remorse that makes it extremely difficult to initiate that conversation, make it happen. You're the adult. You can choose. If you've publicly shamed your child, he or she needs to hear you genuinely apologize and communicate clearly assurance that it won't happen again. And you have to understand that they might not necessarily believe you. It may take time. You know, they have to see you walk the walk before they're sure of the bridge, you know. This will have a restorative effect on your relationship so that you can begin to leverage your connection as your biggest, quote, weapon. I'm not fond of that term, but she did put it, quote, for influencing your child's behavior, not shaming. And this is from Why Shaming Your Kids Isn't Effective Discipline by Jennifer Wolf at VeryWellFamily.com, October 2018. And with that, I'm going to check in with you, Dr. Mathis, for any overall comments on this last part.
Yep, I would say that you can begin to leverage your child as your biggest tool for influencing your kid's behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Not weapon.
Fair enough. Yes,
yeah.
I think that's a better word.
Right, and I find myself teaching parents this a lot when they bring, you know, because a lot of times when folks come in, the identified patient is the, you know, the acting out adolescent or adult. And so a lot of what I do is try to figure out what's going on. Obviously, I'm going to try to help the identified patient if he or she has emotional issues, which most of them do. But, you know, the parents aren't guiltless either, so to speak, and they have their own stuff. I mean, none of us are. We all have our own stuff. So what I try to do is get the parents to look at their stuff in a way that doesn't shame them, because what I find sometimes if when I say, well, you know, really, you guys aren't exactly doing that right, you can just see this look of, for lack of a better term, and I hope my listeners will excuse me when I say this, this term of oh shitness on their face, like, oh my God, and you can see them, I mean, you can see the wheels turning, oh my God, I'm a terrible parent, oh shit, I'm horrible and terrible, it's all my fault, and I'm like, whoa, 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 and when I see that, I like put the brakes on that. I'm like, no, 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 wait a minute, well, what's that look? I'm getting that, oh shit, I'm a bad parent look, and a lot of times, parents will kind of look at me like, how the hell did he know that, or they'll start laughing, and I'll go, this isn't about shaming you guys either, FYI. This isn't about pointing fingers. This is about, hey, here's a problem, and let me tell you, show you how to solve it. This is not about you're a bad parent. It's never about your being a bad parent unless you continue to do what you do, in spite of the fact that I'm teaching you something different. You're doing it because you're an anapodo or anapodi. Oh, sorry, that's Greek for stupidly hard-headed. And you're just going to do it because. And I run into parents. And I'm sorry. I know that's Greek to the listeners, right? Okay. Thanks. I'll be here all week. So, yeah, I know. Could you just shut the hell up? So, I have had parents who have done that, however, and that's usually the cluster B parents. And a lot of them will give me this yes, but routine. Oh, you know, I'm not here to change me. You can't teach an old dog new tricks. You know, what you're probably saying is true, but. And my response is the only but in this room is the one that you're sitting in that chair in. And to excuse yourself is to accuse yourself. And so all you're really telling me is you don't want me to call you out on your stuff. Well, you've come to the wrong place, honey. Sorry. Homie, don't play that game. You know, if you have pooped in your pants and it smells, I'm calling you on it. Right? I call myself on it. I call everybody on it. I'm an equal opportunity bigot, right? So it's really interesting to see the reactions of parents I get, because you can always tell the parent that gives a flip and wants to be a good parent and just doesn't know how or made mistakes or whatever, versus the parent who just doesn't really want to change and what they really want to do is continue to do what they do and expect to get, you know, a different result. And I'm like, okay, that's the common sense definition of insanity. And they're quick to point fingers at other people, but holy moly, if you point stuff out for them, they get very unhappy. But, you know, I'm not here to make people happy. I'm here to encourage them to be awesome and live well. So if that means I have to point stuff out that they don't like, well, sucks to be them. I'm not here to win a popularity contest. So if I don't do that, I'm not doing my job. You know, and when I muck up, I'm the first guy in line going, okay, folks, this is my muck up. And I find that when I do that, I get a whole lot more respect and a whole lot more admiration out of people than if I try to lie my way out of it or hide it or whatever, which I almost never do. I probably did as a kid, and I probably occasionally still do as an adult because I'm not God. I make mistakes. But I try to minimize those things as much as possible because they are not very healthy and they're not – they don't do anything to improve yourself as a human being, and they sure as hell don't endear you to other people. That's for dag, I'm sure.
Fair enough. Okay, so in conclusion with this, it has been eye-opening for parents to realize how many shaming and toxic methods have been commonplace in American culture. It's good that we are finally seeing some honest movement away from that, thus hopefully breaking the generational cycle of emotional abuse as discipline. And one more time, just checking in to see if there's anything you want to touch back on from any other section or any final closing words on this.
Well, all I would say is if you're a person who wants help with this, you know, I'm sure there are some pretty good sources out there to help you. Check some of the sources that we talked about tonight. You know, if you're having issues, call a professional who deals with this kind of stuff and get some counseling, get some coaching. You know, you're getting educated. You're improving yourself. We can all be improved on. We can all be educated in our quest, as I call it, to be awesome. And I love it when people are awesome. I feel it's really cool when people take the challenge to, as Bill Simzik, the famous producer of the Eagles, and Joe Walsh and James Gang Bob Seger would say, dare to be great. And I love it when people do that.
Excellent. Okay, so this more or less concludes our show on shaming as parental discipline. So we hope our listeners now better understand healthy ways to guide their children and when and how to correct them in effective and harmless ways. So on behalf of myself, Dr. Mathis, and NDB Media, we want to thank our listeners this evening and give our appreciation also to those of you who may be joining us later via podcast, iTunes, etc. We will see you guys in 2 weeks on Wednesday, February 6th, 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on blogtalkradio.com. Our upcoming show topics include, on the 6th, we're doing labels, the stigma of diagnoses for kids and their parents and diagnostic adults. And on February 20th, we're doing separating artist and art, why many of us really care a lot whether or not we want to patronize an artist when the human being is despicable, but the creations are meaningful to us. People get really wound up about this argument. Even the people who don't really care, they get wound up that other people are getting wound up. So we're going to take a look at that. So we'd also like to give a shout out to other NDB Media shows coming up in the next couple of days. Pardon me a moment. Apologies, still have a cough I'm wrangling with. Tomorrow night, Travel Itch Radio, January 24th, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Kempton, the premier boutique hotel group in the United States, takes center stage on Travel Itch Radio on Thursday, January 24th, when our interview guest is Stephanie, S-T-E-P-H-A-N-E. I don't know how to pronounce that. She is the director of operations for Kempton Mid-Atlantic Hotels. Listen live at 8 p.m. EST as guest host Roger Noriega interviews Stefani about the vast array of Kemptons, including the Monaco and Palomar brands, throughout the Mid-Atlantic state. And then Sunday, February 10th, for those of you who want to follow my other show on NDB Media, The Walking Dead Online Viewing Party returns for Season 9, Episode 9, which is entitled New Enemy, and that's the mid-season opener. So join us at 8:30 p.m. to catch up on what we've missed since Thanksgiving and discuss what is to come in the back half of Season 9 of The Walking Dead. Please look for The Rock and Roll Shrink at Facebook, on Twitter, on iTunes, and at www.rockandrollshrink.com. Good night, everybody, and rock on.